Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Xbox Game Passengers Podcast. I'm your host, Derek, and this is the show where every episode, myself and a guest will dissect and discuss a single game that's available on Microsoft's Xbox Game Pass service, which was chosen for us completely at random. I'm back. It's been a while. The last episode of the show, I think, came out in like January or something, and I don't know what happened. I went into that episode thinking nothing had changed, and I sort of fell into like a gaming funk slash sort of state of burnout that I still have not escaped. But, you know, I have not been playing a lot of video games for this period of time, and that makes me sad, and I miss talking about video games. So I thought, let's kick this back into gear and chat about what we do remember about the last selected game, which is a game called As Dusk Falls. Of course, Doogie has returned. How are you today, Doogie?
I am very well, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thank you, first of all, for joining me today, and thank you for agreeing all those months ago to talk about this game. And I apologize.
Don't ever apologize.
I mean, I always apologize. So
I know you do. I know you very well at this point, my friend. No, it's all good. It's always a blast to be here. I'm always hyped when you ask me to play something, because it usually means that I play something I might never have played before, mm-hmm. and or would never have given a chance to. And I always enjoy chatting to you about games. I often find with you and I, we either very much agree on things, mm-hmm. or we are diametrically opposed, which I love. I love being able to debate things with you and just, chat about games in general.
Yeah. Speaking of complete opposites, I went to a Disturbed concert last night, and another old 2000s band opened for them, Theory of a Dead Man. And the whole show overall, it opens like, the lights are like slowly coming up, and the theme from The Last of Us starts playing, and I'm like, Doogie would fucking hate it here. So.
Now, I've never once said I don't like the music in The Last of
Us. Just every other piece.
Now, you're gonna make me give controversial opinions on your podcast, Eric. Mm. It's unfair.
It wouldn't be the first time, I don't think. But yeah, I'm excited to be talking to you about this too. I don't know how this is going to go, because it was so long ago that we played this game, so thanks for bearing with us. I also don't know what the next episode of the show looks like, so it's going to be formatted a little bit different here. We're not going to draw another game at the end of the episode, because I don't want to promise you something that I won't deliver. So as I said, I have not been really enjoying playing video games or doing things that I enjoyed previously for a number of months now, and it's so disappointing, because it's like to the point where even games that I was genuinely looking forward to and like, oh, I can't wait for the day that comes out, that day comes and I'm just like, I don't feel like it. And so I feel like I'm missing so many things, and that includes some Game Pass releases, so I might try to play some of those and talk to someone about those games that I feel like I missed versus just playing something random. Because at times, at times it feels like I'm playing these games because I have to, which is the whole point of the show. But then it's like hard to enjoy that time, especially if God of War just came out, but I'm playing As Dusk Falls instead. And that's like a hard thing.
It's a hard pill to
swallow. Exactly.
Well, I think as well, like, to give yourself some slack, like, there was so many releases I feel like in the last year,
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like every week almost felt like something major was happening or something huge. Unless you're an Xbox player, which I know that you straddle the lines of many, many different consoles. But yeah, I feel like every other week you were hyped about something else. So you couldn't possibly, like, with your schedule of just life in general, there was no way you were going to be able to keep up with everything. So I can imagine, like, you know, I don't want to use the word obligation, but like feeling a responsibility to the podcast to play something new every month that was specifically dedicated to this when so much is happening. I think you should cut yourself just an iota of slack.
Never. Can't do that.
No, I know. But
and it was like, it was to the point where it was like when a short game popped up, a game that was like, oh, I looked it up and it's like 4 or 5 hours. I'd be like, fuck yeah, because it like I'd have to play less and it would give me more time either not play as I was like falling into this funk or to play the things that I wanted to play at that point. So there'll be another episode soon. I don't know what that game will be, but it's probably, I'm just going to play a few games that I want to play and then talk about those with some people. And, you know, that's going to be the show for a little bit. So, but today, yeah, we're talking about a game called As Dusk Falls. Would you like, is there anything you want to talk about first or should we jump into it?
No, we could jump in. So As Dusk Falls is an original interactive drama from Interior/Night that explores the entangled lives of two families across 30 years. Starting in 1998 with a robbery gone wrong in small-town Arizona, the choices you make have a powerful impact on the characters' lives in this uncompromising story of betrayal, sacrifice, and resilience. Replay the story again and again to uncover vastly different outcomes for the characters and explore hidden nuances behind every decision. Will your characters survive unscathed? What kind of people will they ultimately become?
Do you feel like that is an accurate synopsis?
I feel like there's elements of it that are. And without giving too much away before we jump kind of right in, I feel like it's a lofty promise. And
yeah.
I feel like there's parts of it that did deliver it, but you know me, I love a controversial opinion. And I think the elements that did work, I think, very much worked. And I think the elements that didn't work with it felt like they just, like I knew I was in a video game. I knew I was, and I wasn't immersed because of the things that didn't quite work out. Does that kind of make sense?
It does. Yeah, it does. I remember being so excited for this game when it was announced because it was like, you know, these like choice-based narrative titles are like one of the things that I love. And, you know, from loving, you know, all the old Telltale games, being very excited for those to come back whenever that does happen. And, you know, things like Life is Strange, the Life is Strange series, except for
Life is Strange.
Yeah, the rest of them, aside from Life is Strange 2, like, you know, cannot wait to play those games when they come out. Mm. And so this looked like it would fall under the same lines. And I'm sure it's not the cause. It's not the cause of my gaming funk. But at times it felt like it because I don't know, this was like the last game I played before I kind of stopped playing video games, and I hated every second of it, basically. I don't know what, like, I have to be wrong in this case, just looking at everyone else's opinion of this game. Like, this game was getting like 8s and 9s across the board and talking about how like deeply affecting the story is and how much your choices really matter and like just universal praise. And it was a chore every time I was like, yeah. And again, we were playing through this at the time that God of War Ragnarok came out, which I was excited to play. And every time I would like go to play that, I was like, this game's fucking awesome. Like that game, God of War Ragnarok, possibly like the best combat like ever that I've experienced in a video game. And you know, I like the story is just so good and it's such a beautiful game. And it would be like, I want to play that, but instead I have to play this animated, like visual novel with the odd, like choice and the odd and just like, you know, the quick time events and stuff like that. And that was, and I like, I didn't connect with the characters. I didn't connect with the story.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was doing something wrong because I wasn't based on what everyone else seems to think about this game.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I think the things that didn't work for me, you know, in a story like this, and I guess spoiler warning at this point, but in a game like this where there are potential characters' deaths and even potential characters' suicides and, you know, things of that nature, or they talk about suicide and things like that, you really have to build up like a bank of empathy for the people involved. Because mm-hmm. that's how something impacts you, is because you feel something for those characters, because you empathize with them, or even you sympathize with them. But from the word go, I didn't connect with any of them. I was laughing at, say, before we started chatting, just before we started recording, because I was reading through my notes, because as you say, it's been a while since we actually played it.
For sure.
Just trying to get myself familiar with my own notes and things like that. And one of the notes, it's the third note I wrote, so it's clearly in the very beginnings of the game, and it just says, I really hope that Grandpa isn't around a lot. I instantly hate him. And, like, it takes a lot to instantly hate a character. Like, you have to try to make someone instantly hate a character that's there, and I just instantly hated him. And then they try and make him very sympathetic later on, and things like that, but every time he turned up on screen, I was just like, man, that guy's an asshole. I hate mm-hmm. that guy. Well, I felt nothing for him.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because I think the game starts and it puts you very quickly into like this extreme situation before I feel like you really know characters or a lot about them. And then, you know, the time it kind of like jumps back and forth, and you kind of get to know and probably are supposed to get to like and feel for these characters as you go through the story. And I feel like I felt that with some of the Holt family, you know, the younger kid, what's his name? Jay especially. But I felt like I didn't feel it for any of the Walkers basically at any point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like the funny thing about that is, like, we should kind of go back and forth as well. But like, I wrote a note at the end, you know, near the very end of the game, you play as an older version of the daughter from the family that are witness a robbery,
right,
essentially, and she ends up going to find Jay basically, because Jay gets away, or Jay can get away, and so I guess she goes, in my game, she ended up going to find him and managed to track him down, and they try and make Jay the super sympathetic character in the end. He's this very young kid of this criminal kind of family. And so some of the game you play is him, and you have to make decisions as him. So they try and build up this empathy piece. And then at the very end, I kind of feel like they made this choice to write him as this, like, oh, he's this really cool survivor that was just this really troubled kid and like got dealt a bad hand. And ultimately, like, all of his choices throughout the game, regardless of whether you chose A or B, he was still an asshole. Like, he still made active choices. And so by the end, when you see him and he's like living off the grid, and they even give him a dog just for extra sympathy points, like, when I saw him, you get the option to like either turn him in or like just let him like live his life and do that kind of thing. I turned that kid in so fast. And then when you get the results at the end, apparently only 1% of gamers turned him in, and I was like, what the fuck is up with that? Like,
yeah, that's an interesting point, because I feel like, I don't know, he was, I feel like, the character that I probably felt for the most, because as you go through and see his past, like, time and time again, it really feels like he doesn't agree with what's happening, but it feels like he feels like he doesn't have a choice, and it just feels like he's very much a product of his situation, and his situation is that he's surrounded by shit. And I don't know, I don't think I said it yet, but to make it clear, I did not finish the game. I couldn't.
Oh, okay.
Like, this game made me, it's not the game's fault, but I never wanted to play video games again, basically, as I was forcing myself through this. I think I got to, like, the second to last chapter. But was him removing himself, like, was that him removing himself from society because he felt he didn't deserve to be in it? Or what was the, like, what did you...
So, from what I remember, because obviously, I don't know exactly what point you kind of got up to, but essentially how things panned out is that Jay and the kid, whose name escapes me, I cannot remember her name.
Zoe,
yeah. Thank you. So Jay and Zoe end up like kind of meeting up, and they sort of kind of partly run away from their lives together.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up like, there's this absolutely ridiculous bit where they end up at this like house party, because they have to go and find someone, and I want to say it's to like repair a truck or get a truck so they can drive away or borrow a car or something along those lines. And they end up at this party where like they take drugs, and the whole thing felt like the worst after school special I've ever seen. And there's this big like trippy scene, and then, you end that chapter, and then you get to the next chapter, and suddenly Jay has survived like a bear attack, and just like casually had like, oh yeah, I've just like super survived a bear attack and blah 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 blah. Oh, I've been married, and but my you know partner left me after a while. She couldn't handle the being away from society and blah blah blah. So yeah, he does try and like remove himself and just, I just want to live my life, man. And like, you know, I made some mistakes and I'm sorry for them, and which again, like, that piece I can totally understand, you know, making mistakes, reflecting on your life, that piece I can totally get. But I feel like on one hand, they wrote so many of the characters with zero empathetic traits.
Sure, for sure.
And then they just really put everything that they had into this one kid who ultimately, again, you know, commits a bunch of heinous crimes.
Yeah.
And then just runs away, doesn't turn himself in, doesn't try and stop it really at any point. You don't really ever get the option to... Or as far as I could tell, you don't ever really get the option that Jay says, like, no, we can't do this, and not just get slapped around the face and then accept.
Yeah, it did feel like in those early chapters when you're back on, like, the family farm, and it really felt like a better choice could be presented, and I would, like, always choose that, but it felt like it just made everyone else around you mad, and that you were then forced into making the bad choice or a slightly less bad choice in the end anyways. But you're right about, I think, a lot of the Holtz, especially, I think you're probably supposed to hate. And so in those early farm chapters, it was like every chance I had to do something against the father, I did that. Like, I was like,
yeah,
this guy's fucking horrible. I hope he dies, you know? And I just, again and again, I would make that choice.
Basically. Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't far off it. And I just, If the Holtz, if the sort of criminal family hadn't been written as, because again, they felt caricature. It felt like the bad guys from Home Alone with a bit more grit and a bit more alcoholism and a bit more beating your kids, you know. So you can't have that like absolute absurdly over the top evilness and have it in a story that was ultimately, I guess, meant to be around the idea of the ties of family and what you'll forgive and what you can't forgive and that kind of thing. You can do both. Like, you either go the very camp, very over the top route, or you try and tell a really serious story. And I think they tried to tell both. And ultimately, I think what happened is that that's why it feels so disjointed, is that you have these so over the top pieces of melodrama that happened with the Holt family, and then you go back to the family that witnessed the robbery, the Walkers.
Yeah.
And really that's just about a family kind of trying to, you know, start a new life for themselves, and they witness these horrible things that happen. So ultimately it felt like there was two stories that were subsequently happening, which is fine, but the tone just didn't match in both. So it was really difficult to invest in either or any. You know, it just became a problem to invest in the character.
Sure.
So ultimately, by the end of it, I was like, oh, cool, this is done. Can I turn this kid in now, please? Like, you know, and it shouldn't feel like that. You should get to the end of that story and be like, man, this is a tough choice. Do I want, you know, the kid's had a rough life and blah, 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 blah. I was like, nope, FBI, come grab this motherfucker. Let's get him out here. Like, and it just was so easy for me at the end.
It's interesting, too, because, like, as we're talking about it now, like, some of these characters were... I don't know. Their situations were interesting. Like, I would watch this potentially if it was short, maybe, you know, but to be experiencing the story, I feel like this, something like this could really work as like one of the Netflix multi-choice releases that they've
yes.
have all been really, really cool. But it felt like it was a fairly interesting story that felt kind of generic in terms of there's a family and a robbery and the bad family in town is coming and everyone like knows everyone because it's a small town and the sheriff, what's going on with the sheriff? The sheriff's controversial as well. And what's he up to? You know, like it felt like a lot of tropes there,
yes.
But it felt like at a deeper level, the characters were fairly interesting, at least some of them, but tying it together with this, like, it felt like it was like a graphic novel or something that they were like, let's make a game out of this. And game, I feel like, is putting it quite loosely.
Yes.
Because again, it's like, I don't know, it's one of the least animated things that I've seen in terms of gaming, but it's also just basically just choices and QuickTime events. And, you know, even comparing, say, that to like the old Telltale games, that is a lot of what those are too, but at least you're like, you're still doing more. You're still walking around. You're still interacting with objects. Like it's, there's so much more to it that makes it feel like a living, breathing world that you can interact with versus just like pressing the right button to get to the next frame, basically.
Yeah. And like to your points as well, because I think you're so right. I thought the visuals, the way that it's actually drawn or painted or however it is they've managed to create the art style for this is really gorgeous. Like the actual visual of it,
for
if
sure.
you were to look at a screenshot of it, you'd be like, damn, that looks great.
Yeah.
The sad part about it is, as you say, it's kind of like almost vignettes that you get. You get these kind of little poster board and the animation is sometimes it's in motion, which led to some like super awkward pieces where most of the animation, as Derek says, is like, imagine it's something happening at 3 frames a second, 5 frames a second, but then they would animate fully like a cop car. So you would get this like very cardboard cutout police officer that's animated at 5 frames a second, and then you get a 60 frames a second animated 3D object of a cop car, and it just like, again, pieces like the decisions like that were just like, well, just animate the cop car in the same way that you've animated the cop. That would make more sense and it would fit in visually,
and I'm sure it was all stylistic choices, but that style for sure didn't work for me,
you know. And it didn't work for me either. I thought the control scheme was probably the worst control scheme I have ever had the misfortune to utilize. Designed for mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up as well, and because the first time I played the game, it was on the Xbox, and I hated playing it just because like the controls were awful. Mm-hmm. And then I also, that was also like pretty, like I think that there had been some updates to the cloud streaming on iOS around that time, and so I was like, this seems like a game that would be like fucking built for touch and built for something like playing on a device that was in your hands. And so every other session of the game I played, I just used Xbox cloud streaming. Oh, and because I was like, you know, it's simple and there's not a lot of like timing based stuff that's super time sensitive. Like there, you have a little bit of a window. So even if there is a little bit of lag or something like that, it's okay. Then the cloud streaming experience ended up being like it felt like I was playing something locally for the most part, but the control scheme, because you're then just using like touch controls, so you're just like kind of tapping on the choice that you want to make, and it converts the QuickTime events into like swipes or taps or hold down here sort of thing, and so that felt so much better for the rest of the game. And I was like, there's no way I'm playing this on the actual Xbox.
You made a smart choice.
Yeah.
I just like, I don't know. I think the other thing that, like, at the end of the game was in 6 chapters.
Yes, yeah.
And at the end of every chapter, you kind of got a review of your chapter,
which I always loved those, like in the Telltale games and the Life is Strange, just to compare like where you fell versus 100% versus other players or choices that you didn't even see because you didn't do the right thing, sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really like that. I played. You lent me your PS5 last year.
Yeah, yeah.
It must have been last year, right? And I played through Detroit Become Human.
Right.
And like the decisions that you make through there, and there was hundreds of them.
Oh yeah. Looking at the chart in that game.
Yeah.
Wild.
Like wild stuff. And I really enjoyed that. I feel like with this though, the difference being that, you know, I quite enjoyed Detroit Become Human. I quite enjoyed elements of it, and I thought some of it was really well done, and some of those decisions did actually make me pause and go like, oh, what do I want to do here? But like, I feel like at the end of every single chapter, and I got given the tag of like quick thinker, you know, make decisions quickly, because I was just like, no, this is obvious. Like, turn the guy in, or like,
yeah, that's, you know, fair. There wasn't a lot of moments where I felt like I really had to think about what choice I was making. Like,
no, yeah, no. But I was also absolutely affronted. So the like, as I say, only 1% of people that have played it, and maybe it's because not many people got to the end of the game, Derek, I don't know, but 1% of people turned in the criminal kid at the end, and I was like, come on team, that's like more people turn him in. There was a bit where basically that near the end of the robbery, I want to say it's maybe near the end of like chapter 3 or whatever, or 4, whatever it is, that the father of the family that witnessed the robbery, Vince.
Yep.
He kind of like gets captured by the family, or he can sacrifice himself, because I think ultimately they take Zoe, and then you can kind of give yourself up to be like, take me instead, or whatever. And then you play as one of the criminal brothers, and you get the choice to either let Vince go or, you know, keep him locked up in the car or whatever. And only 39% of people chose to let this father go to get back to his kid, who completely innocent bystander in the whole thing. And, you know, you play a lot as Vince trying to like foil the plans of the criminals,
right,
and try and get the cops on the line and all that kind of stuff. But again, it just made me think, like, who's playing this game? Like, who, you know, if this is meant to really test that part of you that goes, I empathize with this character over that character, does that honestly mean that 61% of the people that played this game empathized more with the criminals and said, yeah, I'm going to keep this dad. Yeah, we're going to keep this hostage. Absolutely. Let's do this. Like, that was just wild to me. Like, so many of those choices just felt absolutely wild that people went right. in a particular direction. But yeah, just not an enjoyable experience, as you say. And I think so much of it just felt like, as I said before, like a kind of after school special type of thing, where the tone just wasn't, like, the tone didn't match the visuals, and the visuals didn't match the gameplay, and the gameplay didn't match the story, and none of everything felt disjointed. And yeah, as you said before, calling it a game is a stretch, I think, a hop, skip, and a jump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I don't have that much more to say about it. Like, it was...
Well, it made you stop playing video games. So I think that's in itself a crucial insight into how you felt about it, you know?
It wasn't its fault. It wasn't its fault. Or it was its fault, and I'm still not out of it, so...
You're still just not having fun.
You know, yeah.
I will say, I said at the very start, I think there were some things that they did very right. I think I want to give them a call out, because at the start of chapter 3, they did talk about suicide, and there was not necessarily a graphic visual for it, but they did talk a lot about it in the episode. It was very obviously that. And they gave you a content warning at the start of that chapter.
Mm-hmm, right, right.
And it gave you the option to skip some of the scenes. So I think things like that needs to be way more prevalent in gaming and across the arts in general. You know, we talk about safe spaces in creative arts, and that really gave folks the option to opt in or opt out with that, which I thought was a really great choice. And I that was the one moment that I was like, okay, fair play. Like, that was great. You crushed that. And I think it's a super important choice that they made. And I just wish they'd made literally every other choice different other than that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you recommend this game to others?
Do you know what? I feel really bad for saying no, because I feel like there is, and I said this about, like, not so many of the games that we've played for this podcast, but other games that we've played that are very much in that walking simulator kind of vibe. And I feel like...
Which is like one of my favorite genres.
I know. But I feel like I have... I think just these games just aren't for me.
Okay, yeah.
And I think the idea of where you're 99% of your gameplay, as you say, is just choosing A or B. That, to me, as you said, would be far better. I feel like I would enjoy it much more if it was like a TV show that I could make decisions about what the characters were going to do. For some reason in my brain, the distinction between a TV show where you could make choices and a game that's just about making choices are very, very different things. And I think gameplay and story for games should go hand in hand. You should, as your skill goes up, the game should become more difficult because you're more skilled in that area and you're able to meet the challenge, or you're able to get timings more perfected or parry better, or, you know, like those kind of things I think should go hand in hand.
Right.
And I don't think this game ever evolved. It was the same at the start than it was at the end. So the challenge didn't ramp up. There wasn't anything different about the whole thing. It was a story that you interacted with. And that to me isn't a game. That is a book or a show that you can make decisions with.
Yeah.
And I think there should be a clearer distinction between that. So no, I don't think I would recommend this to anyone unless you are absolutely banana pancakes, crazy in love with visual novels. I think that's the only audience that could really get something out of this.
Sure. That's a good point, too, because I went into it thinking that it was more of like a Telltale-style story adventure game, and it's not. It is very much a visual novel-style experience, and I think going in with that expectation may have changed like the experience itself. So,
but I don't think that was an unfair expectation that you put on yourself, because I think from the way that it's talked about, you know, it's this, you know, the choices that you have make a powerful impact on the character's life and an uncompromising story of betrayal, sacrifice, resilience, you know, that kind of thing doesn't, I mean, I suppose you could argue that, yes, that does say something like a visual novel to you, but to me that says, oh, I'm going to be like playing the lives of these characters. Making these big, grand, sweeping gestures that can completely change the course of someone's life and done in a way that is gameplay specific. But no, it's just a choose your own adventure book, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's not something I can connect with at the same level that I can connect with other video games.
And I think from the walking simulator perspective too, it's like I really enjoy those, and I feel like the worlds that they build in a lot of those games, which I already said, but the ability to like explore and look at your surroundings and talk to other people and like learn about the world around you, whether or not it moves the story forward, that stuff doesn't exist here, and I really missed it. There wasn't really much world building from that sense or anything like that. And talking about walking simulators as well, which game did you dislike more, this one or The Medium?
Oh my god.
I moderately enjoyed The Medium. The Medium, I wasn't disappointed that I played.
Oh, that's such a good question. And do you know what? I'm gonna say I preferred this.
That's what I thought you'd say.
As much as I'm talking about, and it might sound like I'm backtracking on my own thing that I've just said, but as much as I like didn't enjoy the experience of this game, you know, I think I got through it in two sittings.
Okay, yeah.
Two or three sittings. And I didn't really have to spend a long time, you know, moving a character from A to B just for the sake of making that interaction happen. So I kind of feel like they've got some similarities in the fact that they were both just games about making a decision, pressing a button, cutting open a flesh window. But the difference being that with this, all I really had to do was select a choice, and so that felt less infuriating than walking endlessly down boring corridor after boring corridor. And I guess you could argue that the dialogue in this was... Because what I will say again is I feel like the voice acting in this was really pretty decent.
It was, yes, it was, absolutely.
And you know, whereas The Medium, which we've already talked about, there were moments in that where I just feel like... were wild.
But sometimes in The Medium you got to walk down the same hallway, but it looked totally different because it was like a different world
because of the butterflies. You're not wrong. I mean,
it was like, it's kind of like it was two hallways.
You're not wrong. And you know what, that whole technology that they made for rendering two screens at the same time, I'm sure they're gonna do endless, countless phenomenal games with that in the future. But no, I feel like this had a similar thing in the way that I think it was a gimmick for a gimmick's sake. It was because, again, I really wanted that art style. If it was that art style, but it was fluid motion, like that would have been so cool to see. Because again, the art style was so impressive and visually really striking, and honestly different to, I think, anything I've ever seen in a video game before. Yep, I don't think I've ever seen that kind of art style, that specific art style. And so that was really beautiful. But I just, again, the animation wasn't right, and I'll repeat myself there. But no, I still think I would play this again over The Medium. If you had a gun to my head and said one of these two again, I would play this over The Medium.
Wild. I would choose The Medium for sure. As for this game, who am I to tell you what to play, you know? It's not a show or anything.
Don't cop out.
No, I would say give it a shot, but
oh, really?
Because I don't know, I had a different experience than it seems like many people did, based on even just looking at like the Metacritic score for this game. I remember that like this game, I think it won like the Games for Change award at the Game Awards the last year, I guess, which is when it came out, like due to some of the themes that it deals with. I think that there is some powerful stuff in here. I think if you go in thinking that this is a visual novel and that your interactions will be very limited and that you play with your cell phone and not your controller, you know, I think going in with all of those things in mind, it could be a different experience. And it's just, I could not get over those things. And so it wasn't for me. But I think that there is a lot to like here. I just didn't like any of it. So
there's a lot to like, but I didn't like any of it.
Yeah,
is probably the most Derek Cravell sentence.
The most non-committal.
I love that. That was great. Yeah, I'm actually surprised that you said that. I thought you would be absolutely against people playing this. But I mean, I suppose, and I think, you know, I kind of touched on it earlier on when I said that they gave you the option to kind of opt in or opt out of some kind of graphic scenes and stuff. And, you know, it is important. So I suppose you're very fair in saying that some of the themes that it deals with and some of the themes of the story, you know, if handled in a particular way, could be way over the top in terms of, wow, that was really poorly handled. And like I said already, the drug taking scene just felt like the most, don't do drugs, kids, kind of scene. But so to give them their credit, I think they tried to tackle a challenging story. I just don't necessarily think they did justice.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. Speaking of drugs, did you guys have DARE? Or a program like DARE was an acronym, and I don't remember what it stood for, but it was like this group, and it was like DARE to resist drugs. And
no,
there was just like, I don't know, I feel like there was a bear, like maybe a bear mascot, or I might be mixing up
smoking
different
bear
things. I just remember it was just bear. I don't know, like a couple times through elementary school, you'd all go to the gym, and somebody that had done drugs and had a very traumatic experience, like now they're in a wheelchair or something like that, would come in and speak. And I feel like I think they had stopped this when I was a kid, but prior to that, like, I think they made you like sign something that was like, I will never do drugs. And it was this a DARE spot? Was that a DARE sponsored scene?
As if you ever like were got arrested or whatever in the police interview.
They would have that contract.
Yeah, Hunter, you signed this when you were 8 years old.
Like, we looked at your permanent record.
Yeah. Which
I don't think is actually a thing that exists, but you know, you were always scared of things going on it.
I don't think we had DARE, but I do remember distinctly being in high school and someone from like the drug squad from the police came in to talk to us all one day. And brought in like I seem to remember, and I maybe I'm wrong to remember this, but I seem to remember he did basically have a briefcase full of like Class A narcotics and just kind of like held up baggies of cocaine in the school, like, yeah, this is what cocaine looks like, and blah blah blah. So I do remember that. Yeah, growing up in Scotland was weird, but yeah, I do remember things like that. But I don't ever think we had that. I don't recognize DARE, certainly.
Yeah, maybe DARE just rhymes with bear, and that's why I think there was a bear.
Maybe you're thinking this. And then I suppose I think you were thinking maybe of Smokey Bear, and that would be a different type of Smokey Bear than the actual like Smokey Bear.
Yeah, there's gotta be a Smokey Bear parody.
Oh, 100%. I mean, if there isn't, I think we've just stumbled across great business idea.
That's true.
I'm talking like parties you could turn up as Smokey the Bear in. Like, it's legal here. I suppose you can't distribute
it. It's like only you can prevent all your guests having a bad time.
Yeah, only you can prevent forest bad trips.
I would love to hear a little bit more about what else you've been playing, just since I haven't talked to anyone about games in a while. Aside from, we have restarted the Geekscape Games podcast. It is now, has a new title. It's called Dynamic Resolution. That one comes out every 2 weeks, and I've been on most of the episodes so far. That has been, I think starting that up again has also like helped me want to start having these conversations again, just because it's like, oh yeah, I really missed having those conversations about.
Yeah, I had a blast when I got to guest on.
Yeah, I'm sure like you got to get back on there too,
because you have a lot of
good thoughts and stuff.
Oh, thanks, Derek.
But yeah, what else have you?
Well, I think like most of
isn't Diablo 4. What are you doing talking to me? Isn't Diablo 4 out this weekend for like a stress test?
So there's the server slam, absolutely. But I got when it was out for the previous weekends that it was out, you only had to get to level 20 in a character to kind of get all of the benefits of the beta.
Was it like if you got to a certain point, you would get something when the full release was out?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I'm an absolute, I was going to say a terrible thing there. I'm a sucker for cosmetic items.
Yeah.
I really am. And you can get this little backpack that's got like a little wolf pup that like is asleep in the back. And that's basically it that you can get. But no, it was a blast. I've played a lot of the beta to answer your question. What have I been playing? When the 2 weekends for Diablo 4 came out, had a lot of fun playing that. I'm a big Diablo person and I've played them all. Diablo 3, I played, God, must be hundreds of hours.
In, wow, really?
On both PC and mm-hmm. Xbox. And I feel like the console release of that, like when that came out, I remember just buying it all again because I'd already had all the expansions and everything like that for PC. And I remember when that came out for Xbox, I was just like, well, guess I'm buying Diablo 3 again.
And that came out sort of at a time there wasn't a lot of like couch co-op stuff.
100%.
Very fun couch co-op.
Absolutely. And it was wicked couch co-op for that.
Yeah.
And because I remember as well, like the thing with Diablo is... I remember when Diablo 2 first came out and I'd already played Diablo 1 and it was big in my family and we loved it and it was great. And by the time that Diablo 2 came out, we actually had 2 computers in the house because my dad is and still plays an absolute ton of video games on PC. And so we would hook up a LAN and we would do like local co-op in the house. And so there's one of the PCs downstairs and one of the PCs upstairs. And if we couldn't ever get like, you know, a voice chat working or whatever, you'd just be like shouting up and down the stairs at one another in my house, like, I'm getting swarmed, like you need to help me, come get me. So that was great. Like I remember that. And then we would get like some of my oldest brother's friends would come over and they would bring like gaming laptops and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they would join the LAN as well. So that was always brilliant. That was always so much fun. But getting back to your question. So yeah, I played a bunch of the beta for Diablo 4 when it was out for the 2 weekends. I'll hopefully be able to sneak some time in maybe today and tomorrow for the server slam. But if not, I already have my cosmetics, so I'll be happy.
For sure. And actual release is in June, is that right?
It's like June 4th. It's
okay.
Coming up
okay.
quick.
Like, oh, yeah, it's 2 weeks.
It's just around the corner, yeah. And so what I really need to do before then is I need to finish off Jedi Survivor.
Oh, you're playing Jedi Survivor?
Yes, I'm playing Jedi Survivor. Because I really enjoyed the first one, and it's that mix of Metroidvania and like Dark Souls-ish kind of combat.
Totally.
And I've never been like a big Metroidvania guy. Like I Metroid and Castlevania, from I remember being a kid not really noticing those games at all.
Okay.
So it was like a genre that completely passed me by. But I remember really enjoying the first Fallen Order.
Yes,
and I've been having a blast with the second one. Although I must admit, AAA games these days, just when they launch, I know we've talked about this off the podcast, but it is so janky. Like even
is it janky? I thought it was supposed to be pretty solid on Xbox.
So on PC, I hear it's like
a nightmare. Yeah,
nightmare to play. But there's still so much jank. I mean, considering the amount of money these companies throw at the games, and listen, this is not me bashing the coders and stuff, because I know crunch is a real thing and those folks don't get enough of a break and they get overworked and underpaid and all of that, so this is not me bashing them, but for the amount of money that they must spend on these kind of things, they really ought to leave things until they're ready to go. And I feel like,
but they can have the money right now and just deal with it later.
Yeah, and this is why so many of these companies are massively evil. But yeah, so I've been having fun with Jedi Survivor. It's very cool, and I spend far too long, again, terrible with cosmetic items, far too long sitting just customizing lightsaber. And
I remember starting Fallen Order. That was the previous one, right?
Yeah.
And like, I'm just like, oh, what's the default? Like, yeah, let's go. Let's get in there. And I really liked what I played from Fallen Order.
Yeah.
But it was not very much because I could not get past that optional frog boss.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not fucking moving on until I beat this asshole. And I just never could. And so I never played again.
Well, it's hilarious. Would you mind if I spoiled something for you?
No, go for it.
And people of the podcast.
Which, oh my gosh, I remember when, yes, you can spoil something, but like when, so this game was coming out, I literally like clicked on an article and it was talking about, I guess that boss was just really hard for everyone. And I was like, and they were talking about it being optional and people were like, just could like struggled so hard with it. And I was like, I think I stopped because I was like, if this is what the rest of the game is going to be like, and I've just had a 3-hour session where I stopped playing at the very same point that I started playing, then I cannot proceed any further with this game. I didn't realize that was like atypically hard, and that the rest of the game isn't necessarily like that.
As hard, like definitely, without a doubt, the hardest boss in that game. Like,
yeah, that's fucking wild.
Like the attack pattern was just gross.
Yeah.
Like, the attacks that you can block versus the attacks that you can't block had exactly the same animation, except that the he glowed red when you couldn't block,
right.
So you knew you had to dodge. But that was like the only difference. So hilariously enough, obviously someone at EA has a sense of humor. It is EA that still do it, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously someone there or at Respawn have a sense of humor, because in all of the market and in all of the promo, the actor that plays Cal Kestis was talking about the fact that no one talks about the ponchos. No one's talked about the outfit that he wears in the first game. So he did all this in a bunch of like interviews and like came on stage at a bunch of like conferences and was like, why is no one talking about the ponchos? So there's an optional boss in Jedi Survivor that is called Spawn of Ogdo Bogdo.
Oh my gosh.
That boss you're talking about. Exactly the same creature, exactly the same attack pattern. The reward for beating him is that you can unlock to be able to wear the ponchos.
Oh, that's
and hilarious. I was like, that's very, very funny. But the minute I came across that boss, I was like, nope. And I was just like, I'm gonna come back when I'm way more powerful than I am now, and I'm gonna fuck you up because there's no way I'm doing it right now. But like all of the, it's very cool because unlocking like way more like stances that you can use. Mm-hmm. So like right at the end of Fallen Order, that's when you were able to use like, you know, two lightsabers and you could kind of separate yours. So
does it like change your, like, is it like, did you play Ghost of Tsushima when you had the PS5?
I did.
Like, was it like that where like changing the stance like makes, like is better for different enemies? And, like, does your actual, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So really cool. So like you can do, and there's like more stances now as well. So there's obviously your single bladed, which is like the kind of regular Jedi kind of stance.
Fucking
there's
noob shit.
There's double-bladed Darth Maul style, which is cool, and that's like a super fast style, great for like big groups of enemies. Then there's like twin lightsabers where you basically just break your lightsaber apart, and it's
I think I saw that in an ad.
And that's like super quick as well, but like very, very close quarters. And then there's one where you've got a single blade and a blaster. Weirdly, they were like, yeah, you're a mixture of Han Solo and Luke Skywalker now. That's what's up. So you can add, like, that's pretty weird. And then there's like Kylo Ren's like cross guard lightsaber, which is like a super slow, you know, big hits, but you can't really dodge or block.
Sure.
The animations are like 4 hours long. So, but it's very cool so far. Like I am really enjoying it, but there's a lot of like cozy sim stuff. Like rather than it being, I remember in the first one, it was really only like 4 or 5 planets that you kind of went to, and each of them had a sort of linear storyline. But as I say, it's a kind of Metroidvania thing where you can kind of backtrack and stuff. This so far from what I've played is like 2 or 3 planets, but they're massive.
Okay.
And they're a bit more open world, but you unlock like a saloon at the start, and you can kind of recruit people to go back to the saloon, and they can unlock more dialogue, and there's like a garden up at the top of the saloon. So like some of that I'm a bit like, okay, you're not Stardew Valley, right? Let's just,
that was the shit I skipped in Fallout 4.
Well, yeah, like 100%. So I feel like there's a lot of people that are going to be like, I'm not going to fucking garden. What are you talking about? Like, that's not going to happen. I'm a Jedi. Like, I'm not like, what's going on? So I feel like some of that's a bit weird. But I'm having a blast with it so far.
That's great.
And other games I played, I went back and played a bunch of Stardew Valley.
Yeah.
And talking about Stardew because it's great. And it's the ultimate cozy sim.
Yeah,
love it.
Michaela's back in the Stardew as of late.
Yeah,
It's a lot.
You got to be in the. It's a lot. You got to be in the Stardew, man. You gotta get there.
I have played a bunch of co-op with her lately.
Yeah,
and so mostly it's just like, I like it when, because this is your farm. I don't know what the fuck's happening. So it's fun for me. But if she like gives me a task that's like, oh, I need you to go catch 10 salmon. Like she gives me a quest and I go do that quest. That then it's fun to play together.
Yeah. See, but that, and I think that's the very sweet thing about Stardew Valley is that it's one of those games where you can lose hours.
Oh yeah, she's played it for hundreds of hours,
which I don't blame her. Like it's such, there's something so like aesthetically soothing about it, from the music to like just the characters.
And yeah,
the,
totally.
Like everything about it is just very, very good. So played a bunch of Stardew again, and then I think that's. There's nothing else that's immediately spring. Oh, I played the Resident Evil 4 remake. I played a ton when it came out, and I like blitzed through it, did like three runs of it, and then I haven't touched it since. But that was really good. I really enjoyed that. Very, very cool. I've liked all the remakes they've done, actually, 2, 3, and 4.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool. I'm excited to see what they kind of do next. I know, was it you that was telling me about the fact that they're doing Village and potentially 4 with like the
PSVR 2? Yeah, I think both are in the works for PSVR 2.
Wild.
That should be like, yeah, we both played Resident Evil 4 VR when it released on Quest last year, 2 years ago, and that was an amazing experience.
So good.
So to just think about like, to think about playing that, but like with like significantly better graphics, like I feel like it'll just feel totally different. And Village was like I loved Village, and to think about playing that in VR too, like it's gonna be
be nuts.
Yeah.
Now, I just had a thought just as we were talking about Quest. Now, a game like As Dusk Falls, that in VR, like when you actually have a shotgun pointed at your head and you have to make this quick decision about
in VR could be really neat.
Thoughts, comments, queries, answers on a postcard. Would that work?
Well, I don't know if we're there yet in terms of like standalone VR power, but I also, Meta is doing a Meta Games showcase at the beginning of June, and there is some speculation that may be when a new Quest could be announced, because the Quest 2 came out in, I think, 2020, so it's approaching its third birthday, whereas the first Quest, I think, was like just over a year, and so there could be a new one coming out soon. Obviously, we had the Quest Pro, but that was like, you know, more, it seemed more business focused and less games focused, and obviously it was like triple the price or something like that. I am excited to see what they do with it, because I go through periods of using mine and not using mine, but I've had so much fun with it, and you know, it helps so much, like, you know, playing mini golf with coworkers and stuff through the pandemic, and just things like that, and a lot of the cool experiences that can be had. I don't use it a lot these days. I would not hesitate to buy the next one when it comes out.
Yeah.
Especially like if it's a similar release frame, like time frame where you're going to buy this and you're going to get 2 or 3 years out of it. You know, I'll play it enough during that time period
you, me, Linda Louise, and Michaela were hanging out recently, and I think we had the discussion of a Quest then as well. And I had said that genuinely, like, Resident Evil 4 VR has been the closest I've ever felt to that, like, childlike sense,
right,
picking up a video game for the first time in years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, being able to, like, actually reach down and, like, pull the pin out of a grenade, mm-hmm. toss it at a bunch of zombies, then, like, quickly reload your gun, pull the, like, hammer back to, like, start shooting again, like, you know, doing dumb stuff, like, wielding a shotgun in one hand and, like, running, like, things like that where you're really like, yes, you are 100% aware that you're in a video game, but it feels so cool
to be in a video game.
Like that, honestly, I think VR, like, I'm so excited by the potential of it.
Yeah, well, and it's still such in its infancy. And so
five years
or 10 years from now, like, imagining what this stuff's going to be like too.
100%.
There's also, I don't know if you played it, but just talking about that kind of immersiveness and interactivity with the weapons and stuff. The Walking Dead Saints and Sinners is also very, very good and very similar. And like, like on that one, like all of your equipment and stuff is on your chest. So like, you'll be grabbing like different things from different areas. And I thought it was like right from the tutorial in that game, like, you have like a machete, and it's like, if you don't swing into the zombie hard enough, it like gets stuck. And so then you kind of have to like pull it out. And it's just like, so, I don't know, it's so neat. It's such a different
cool.
Yeah,
I love that. Yeah, I feel like when you originally showed me the Quest, I think I played like kind of 10 or so minutes of that on your Quest.
Yeah,
and it did seem like a lot of fun. I also hear Boneworks is meant to be really, really good on Quest, which is like another kind of physics based, you know, thing that's kind of like that, a bit more sandboxy and stuff like that. There was also a game, what was it called? Is it Sword and Sorcery?
Yes, that was a blast.
Which is so much fun, just actually being like swinging swords around in real time stuff.
That was a workout.
Yeah, man. The amount of times, you know me, Derek, and for those that don't know me, my wife and I love a rearrange of furniture. And
I feel like every time I go to your place, it's like, you guys are like, this is the last time. And I'm like, I don't believe that for a second.
And neither do we. Like, I hope you understand. We don't believe it either, but we have to say it to ourselves in order to not just rearrange the furniture. Actually, the current setup, you've got to admit, the current setup of the living room has been that way for quite some time now.
So it's due for a change.
So it's due for a change, 100%. Yeah. But no, I was going to say, I remember one time in a slightly different configuration of our living room, Sword and Sorcery is like one of those games where I have 100%, like full on punched a wall.
I was just going to say
because I've had like so much stupid fun, and you're like, you don't, because of how the quest is, like you're just not aware of your surroundings at all, because it fully covers all of your olfactory senses. Really.
Well, and it does, the like Guardian system, I think, does quite a good job. But when you are like, especially with a game like Sword and Sorcery, where you're like maybe in like a big arena and you're like fighting multiple characters, like you are reacting so quickly to things that it's like the Guardian didn't say anything because I wasn't near it, but now a half second later I have like jumped forward and I'm now like swinging my arm, and so that has been, I think, one of the biggest struggles with the quest too, is like not really having a space that's large enough to really lose yourself in it without being like, okay, where is the fridge, am I about to punch a wall, like, and so like having a bigger space in a for things like that, like, would just be super cool.
Well, and I've seen those, and I'm sure you've seen them as well, those like circular like treadmills that you and the temptation, man. Especially when I was like midway through Resident Evil 4, like the temptation to just be like, yep, I'm going to buy a haptic vest and I'm going to buy the treadmill.
Well, and I think that could be like, I think that could be very cool. But I thought that was probably something where it's like the hardware and the software probably exist very separately today. And and once VR as a whole gets further along, like to start thinking about like embedding that more.
Because
that's also like a thought of just like playing, like Resident Evil 4 or something like that, or literally any game, but you're actually just physically like walking and don't like think about it, and you're not just like moving your legs up and down, like you're actually physically, like the immersion there will be like nothing else.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I can't wait for a time when we all just have treadmills in our living room.
Right. Like, I would agree. Like, I'm going to have to talk Michaela into that one, but we'll get there.
I was just going to say, usually what you do is you ask for forgiveness and not permission. So I feel like one day we're all just going to come over and there's going to be a treadmill in the living room. And you're gonna be like,
that's always been there. What are you talking about?
I was here last week. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I just have to wait for it to be a good deal, because she has said explicitly, like, you know, we've missed out on a few like crazy deals, because I'm like, what about this? And then by the time she responds, I was like, okay, like it's gone. And so, you know, there's a price error on that guy. I didn't have time to ask you. I just had to move, and here we are.
I can sense a very bad lie approaching, of like, there's a price error. It was down from $12,000
to $11,997.
And the tax.
And then,
that's well. But yeah, it's an exciting time, I think. And again, just kind of going back to the idea of like, I couldn't tell you the last time before that Resident Evil in VR, I couldn't tell you the last time I had that much kind of like palpable, like kid like energy.
Sure.
Like, oh my God, I'm playing a video game and I can punch the zombies from here. Like, it's very, very cool. But it's an exciting time, I think, to be a gamer. There's lots on the horizon. I feel like, PlayStation are just absolutely crushing it with the with the hardware and some of the games and stuff, and Xbox with Game Pass, like we talk about it often, but just the sheer value that you can get out of Game Pass, like,
for sure,
is wild. And as you were saying earlier on, like perfecting like cloud gaming that is, it's impressive.
I feel like Xbox itself must be very thankful for Game Pass these days too, because it's giving people things to play, because there's been a drought of releases. And of course, just this past week they had their big anticipated release of Redfall, and that is apparently a mess at this point. And Like, it, I'm sure it's one of those things that, like, can be good and will be good, but it's just like you were saying, it's like the another, just another instance of like this AAA thing that comes out a shell of what it potentially should be. And you know, Xbox, especially with their limited releases over the past couple of years, I don't think they can afford that at this point.
No, that they definitely can't.
I'm
thinking about things like Starfield and
yeah, well, and now the pressure on Starfield now and that's going to be janky as fuck because it's a Bethesda game. So,
so Instant comes with jank and built. And,
so,
you know, it's that's kind of worrying. Like, I feel like things like that because I'm a big Bethesda fan. Like, you know,
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Played Skyrim to death. And, I'm scared at this point because I really want to enjoy it. And from all of the hype and everything that they're talking about it, it sounds like it's so much up my street that I'm so excited. But by the same token, I would hate to pick that up, you know, first day, play it, and then just like, here we go.
I think Starfield will be great, and I think it has to be great.
Oh, it has to
but be it's going to be janky as fuck.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, there's no
time. And when it's finished, and when there are no more patches, and when they have moved on entirely to other things, it will be janky as fuck.
Yeah, when they release Skyrim on next generation consoles. Right. I haven't played Skyrim in a while, actually.
Probably overdue.
This
afternoon, you can like move the living room around and then start another game of Skyrim.
The funny thing is now you've seen my little portable Xbox setup, so I just wheel that around like it's some sort of IV drip now. Derek, my wife, Linda Louise, my wonderful wife who's been on an episode of this very podcast, has been talking about with me for a long time doing a wall-mounted TV. And Derek and I share in the philosophy that wall-mounted TVs are terrible.
No, I don't share in the philosophy. I think a wall-mounted TV can be great, but everyone fucks them up substantially.
So badly.
To the point where I can't think of a time where I walked into someone's house and was like, that's a great mount you got going on there. Like,
so... Maybe you don't share the entire philosophy with me, and I don't mean to speak for you, and I apologize for speaking for you, but when you say you have never seen a really nicely mounted wall-mounted TV, anyway, the compromise that we made is that we bought this like TV stand on wheels, basically, where you can hide the cable, manage it all, and hide all the cables, and essentially in my house now I have like a really nice TV that's mounted on it, and I've got my Xbox Series X, and I just like in every room that I can go and play the Xbox in, it's like, okay, we're in the den today. Okay, I'm in the bedroom today. I'll just go and wheel it through like it's my little gaming IV and just go and set it up and go and play. It's great.
That's been perfect.
An awesome solution. Yeah, it's wicked. It's good.
Who needs VR when you can just like carry the screen with you?
Yeah, we could just take all of my shit with me.
Exactly. Yeah, we've been talking for over an hour, so we should probably wrap this up. So thank you so much for chatting about As Dusk Falls and some other things. I hope that you get some time today to play Diablo 4.
I'm sure.
What's going to be, like, with the beta, you said that once you hit, like, level 20, that's when you, like, earned your thing. Were you able to play past that, or was it just, did it stop at level 20?
Yeah, I think you could play, and I could be wrong here.
So, like when it comes out, okay, when it comes out, and does that carry over? Like, when
no.
it comes out?
No.
So, no, you're going to be starting the whole thing over again.
Which, you know, I love, and I love to.
Yeah, which I don't fucking understand at all. I'm going to play through this game, and even if it's, like, one of my favorite games, I will probably never look at it again, because there are so many other things, and you're, like, on your 50th Skyrim run.
Well, apparently.
Which probably, like, I'm probably understating how many Skyrim runs.
Oh, I've definitely done more than 50. I know. When I say Skyrim runs, I should clarify because I sound absolutely wildly insane at this point. I've also
heard you be like, "Yeah, I've played this game for 30 hours and decided I didn't like my character, so I'm starting again."
Yeah,
so 100%. I'm like, "Holy shit!" Like, I would just be like, "Well, like, either I need to finish it or I need to move on because, you know."
Well, so apparently there is a thing, and I'm probably gonna completely misrepresent this whole thing, but apparently there is a thing with neurology where some people will go back to the same thing again and again and again because it's like a comfort blanket, because it's like a really familiar territory, and you know, there's no surprises, you know exactly what's coming, you know what to expect, you can predict things, so it feels like home, it feels like a kind of comfort thing. And I feel like
I don't do the comfort thing, so that's why.
Well, you're always anxious and nervous, so you, so that you're never going to be comforted by things. You need the new and the shiny. You're the advertising guy. We like you see an advert and you're like, well, I guess I'm spending $4,000 today.
Whereas those Tears of the Kingdom TikToks are really getting to me.
Well, I bet I'm surprised. I'm actually surprised that you're not playing it right now.
Yeah,
I'm actually very surprised.
Me too.
And that and the other thing I did go back and try and finally get through was Breath of the Wild, and I'm still not through it, but I've been playing a little bit of that every
now and then.
But yeah, I think that's why I always go back to things, and I can sit there and be like, yeah, I've spent 30 hours on this character. Nah, I feel like that as well comes from, and I'm sure I've talked about it even on this podcast before, there was a game called System Shock 2.
Right. Did the remake of that ever come out? Or is it still in the works?
I don't know. I think there was maybe like a remastered version?
I thought there was a whole remake, but I haven't heard anything about it in like a long time.
Yeah, it's a good point. Maybe, I think you are right actually, but I haven't seen anything about it. But there was a point that because it was like an RPG type thing, and it's what Bioshock is basically based on, System Shock 2. But there was a point in that game where basically if you had invested your skill points in the wrong things, you could basically soft lock yourself out of the ending of the game. You could entirely like fuck up your whole run, you know, hours and hours and hours in. So I think it comes from like early experiences with that being like, well, I guess I'm stuck now. Okay, back to the start, redo this character. I think that's where that comes from as well.
Right.
Just I am 100% that bitch to quote.
Doogie. The System Shock remake launches on Windows, PS5, Xbox consoles, May 30th.
Get out. Are you serious?
I'm serious. Yeah.
Oh, Derek.
You fucked it.
We fucked it because I got between May 30th and June 4th when Diablo 4 comes out.
You're going to have to.
Like, oh my God.
You're going to have to put a lot of hours out there.
And we've got a photo shoot coming up this week, so I have no time. Absolutely no time.
Well, it's a good thing the photo shoot's this week because May 30th is not. I'm very interested in that because I've never played System Shock, but I know how heavily inspired like Bioshock was from System Shock, and I fucking loved the Bioshock games. So maybe the funk's over. Maybe System Shock is it.
Yeah, maybe.
I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, it's like I would say that. Well, depending on whether they've remade mechanics of it or whether it's just a straight like upscaled version of it.
Yeah. But it's been in the works for a long time.
Dude, a long time. I feel like you and I talked about that, I wanna say years ago.
Yeah. Like it looks like the remake was supposed to launch in 2021.
Oh my God.
So
yeah. I guess that pandemic thing maybe delayed things.
Right.
A bit,
But
yeah, it's a good one. I'd be interested to see whether they have kind of redone elements of the story or the mechanics or stuff like that, but or whether it's just a bit of an upscaled remake. But
yeah I feel like it has. So okay, so there was an enhanced edition that was released in 2015, and they announced plans a couple of months later to do a remake. So this remake has been in the works for ages. At some point, they did a Kickstarter. They anticipated a December 2017 release for the remake. They at some point decided they would move it to Unreal 4 because Unity is not a great engine to use if you want to make an FPS on a console. In 2018, it was put on hold. So it sounds like it's been in development hell for quite some time. So, but if it comes out and it's good, like that's going to be great. I'm interested in that.
Yeah, I would go back and play that again for sure.
Yeah. May 30th. See you there.
May 30th, man. I'll see you there. Maybe that's the next episode of your podcast.
Maybe. I mean, it's probably not coming on Game Pass, so it's got to fit slightly in that, like, you could play that, you know, you could play that game with the Game Pass. But yeah, we should wrap it up.
We should have kept enough of your time, buddy.
Thank you again so much for coming on board.
Always. Anytime.
And you'll be on again soon, I'm sure. For those that are listening, thank you for, you know, thanks for coming. And whether it's your first time or you've been here from the start, thanks for sticking with me through some of these gaps in releases. Again, I don't know what the next episode of the show looks like. I like having these conversations, and I want to talk about games, and I want you to be able to hear them, but I just need to play some games that are fun and that I want to play for a while first, and then we'll see what happens after that. So I will be back soon with a conversation about a surprise game that probably came out a while ago at this point, and I hope that you're okay with that. Yeah, we'll be back soon. Thanks again, Doogie.
Thanks, mate.
Appreciate Check out you. The Dynamic Resolution podcast as well. Also on the Geekscape Network. That one comes out every 2 weeks. And we've been talking a lot of, you know, I've been talking about like virtual pinball, which is something I have been playing. I recently got into like retro handhelds, which have pulled me out of my funk a little bit, at least for these handheld games. Shane is getting really into Linux on his Steam Deck. There's like tons of interesting stuff going on that show. So that one is available as well every 2 weeks. And thanks again, and bye-bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.